Mr. Speaker.
Order, order.
It was a long week in the saddle for our 121 members of Parliament. Adding to the usual sitting week's 17 hours, the Business Committee allowed an extra 4 hours for debate on treaty settlement bills on Wednesday morning, with the government then keeping the chamber running well into Friday to pass two budget bills under urgency for reasons explained by the Leader of the House, Jerry Brownlee, following the adjournment of the budget debate just an hour and three quarters after it began on Thursday afternoon.
Mr. Speaker, I move that urgency be accorded the introduction and passing of the Climate Change Response Removal of Transitional Measures Amendment Bill and the introduction and passing of the Customs and Excise Tobacco Products Budget Measures Amendment Bill. These are two bills that arise out of budget decisions announced in the budget read by the Finance Minister earlier today. Speaker, those are bills that the government considers deserve the urgent attention of the House, as I have moved.
Mr. Brownlee's view on the need for urgency met immediate ridicule from across the chamber when Labor's chief whip, Chris Hipkins, rose to speak in the first reading debate on the bill to phase out the transitional one-for-two surrender obligation measure from the New Zealand Emissions Trading Scheme.
Mr. Speaker, as I sat there listening to the government's budget this afternoon, all I could think was, is that it? Really, was that it? Here we are, under urgency, debating two bills, and then I'm thinking, is that it? Is that all that they can really come up with? That's the total extent of the government's urgent agenda following this year's budget.
Following on from Labor's Chris Hipkins, Greens co-leader James Shaw mocked a government claim that the bill was a significant step towards meeting the country's global emission reduction targets.
0.7%. A 0.7% reduction in emissions. Significant? Give me a break.
The Greens co-leader's criticism of the government's climate change bill finally passed on the Voices after the House resumed, still under urgency at 9 on Friday morning, was echoed on the next bill by the party's health spokesman, Kevin Hague, who recalled the urgency accorded tobacco price increases in budgets back in the day.
I remember sitting next to the radio listening to finance ministers from the past reading out the budget, and very often there was a measure to implement or increase an excise tax on tobacco or alcohol, which would typically take effect pretty much immediately. The House would move immediately to debate a bill that would take immediate effect. And Mr. Speaker, for bills of that nature, of course, there was a reason for urgency. Mr. Speaker, I'm wondering actually what the reason is for urgency for this bill. For this bill that actually doesn't take effect until the beginning of next year.
Time enough, Kevin Hague said, to hear submissions from experts and the public, a step that's bypassed under urgency. While New Zealand First Revenue spokesman Fletcher Tabatow explained why his party would stand alone in voting against the bill.
There is no debate from New Zealand First that smoking is a problem that kills New Zealanders. There's no debate on that. But that's not what we're talking about here today. What we're talking about here today is a taxation measure put on, and everyone agrees, the poorest members of New Zealand society. They will suffer the burden of this more than anyone else.
While Fletcher Tabatow and New Zealand First resolved the dilemma of being anti-smoking and anti-tax by voting against the bill, the ACT Party's David Seymour explained why he would be voting for it.
Mr. Speaker, I rise on behalf of the ACT Party in favour and support of this bill. Even though I regard it as a regrettable piece of public policy, and as I've said in earlier stages, that is because of the wider context of the need to support this budget.
That need secured in a formal agreement with John Key's National Party to vote with the government on issues of confidence and money supply, similar to the agreement binding United Futures' Peter Dunn.
Mr. Speaker, it's been a privilege over the last number of years to work with my colleagues in the ACT Party and the Māori Party, alongside the National Government, to achieve a series of policy changes.
Adding to the votes of Messrs Dunn and Seymour, the Māori Party adds two more with one of its two co-leaders, Te Urua Flavel, explaining one of the benefits of their formal agreement with National.
Mr. Speaker, since being a support party in government, we've secured and influenced more than $2 billion dollars worth of budget gains. $2 billion. Now, if some media person had have asked me that question before we came in, we could have put it out there. But I'm helping media today to understand that the Māori Party is bringing something special, unique and Māori to this House, Mr Speaker, not just by presence, but in real substantive gains for our people.
While Te Uru Flavel and his co-leader, Marama Fox, added their votes to the two from ACT and United Future, giving National a total of 63 to pass its budget, the Māori Party and Peter Dunn had crossed to the other side of the chamber the previous night, adding their votes to the combined 58 of the three main opposition parties to nudge a members' bill along another stage. That bill was from Labor's Sue Moroney, extending paid parental leave from 18 to 26 weeks, on its second time around, as noted by Ms Moroney when starting off its second reading.
I move that the parental leave and employment protection, 6 months paid leave and work contact hours amendment bill be now read a second time, for a second time. Because this is a bill that has essentially been before this Parliament before, a bill that was drawn out in 2012. So for 4 years, for four long years, we've been debating in this Parliament a bill to get paid parental leave to 26 weeks, and we've had a majority support for this bill passing, and yet the government has continued to play political games for those four long years with families' lives to try and prevent it from passing.
Sue Moroney said she hoped it would be the last time that she had to lead off a second reading of the bill.
And I hope that the government will see sense and remove its threat of a financial veto.
And even perhaps come to the party the following afternoon.
In the budget, we will see the National Government actually propose an extension to paid parental leave. Are we about to witness that? That they're going to put the backbenchers up as fodder to actually argue against it and oppose it while Bill English has in his back pocket a plan to actually extend paid parental leave? Well, I believe that's exactly what we're about to see played out.
National's backbenchers proved Sue Moroney right on one count, rising one after another to oppose her bill, but unable to alter the arithmetic that had sustained its passage so far.
The ayes are 61, the noes are 60. The bill will be read a second time.
But Ms Moroney's crystal ball let her down as Bill English rose to reveal the contents of his back pocket shortly after two on Thursday afternoon.
Mr Speaker, I move that the appropriations 2016-17 estimates bill be now read a second time. Mr Speaker, it's a privilege to present the eighth budget of this National-led government. We are shaping policy around a 20 to 30 year view of how we can improve the lives of New Zealanders. Budget 2016 does that by making positive long-term choices that will further strengthen our economy and our communities into the future. Mr Speaker, I commend this budget to the House.
Just under 45 minutes from go to woe, Mr English's budget speech was followed by the Leader of the Opposition, Andrew Little, starting the budget debate.
Mr Speaker, they said, you know, make sure you start your budget speech with a joke. But I've had the wind take out of my sails by Bill English. He started by saying, I'm presenting the budget today. Mr Speaker, that wasn't the budget. That wasn't a budget for New Zealand in 2016. That was scratched out, patchwork, hodgepodge, half measures designed to look like an economic strategy. And it's not.
Then it was back across the chamber.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, that was poor old Andrew Little, wasn't it? Who's achieved only one thing in 2016, and that is make David Cunliffe look popular and confident. That is it for 2016. Speaker, they don't call him Angry Andrew for nothing, but not without good reason, because half of his caucus want to leave and the other half of the caucus want him to leave.
And there we must leave the budget debate to join Rhys Lyon in the committee rooms.
In a submission to the Local Government and Environment Committee on Thursday, KiwiRail lawyer Jonathan Earle said the government's proposed resource legislation amendment bill would cut KiwiRail out of consultation over resource consents if building developments were not directly adjacent to railways, and said it could lead to more level crossing accidents.
It is important to note that increased road traffic at a level crossing can occur even though the rail corridor is not immediately adjacent to the subdivision or plan activity, yet the bill in its current form would curtail KiwiRail's ability to influence the planning or consenting process precisely because the rail infrastructure was not adjacent. Development close to railways obviously has the potential to bring more people into close proximity with rail vehicles.
Mr Earle explained KiwiRail's concerns with that aspect of the bill.
KiwiRail's concern is that the bill in its current form and the restrictions on KiwiRail's ability to be involved as an infrastructure provider that may not be on an adjacent site will lead to planning and consenting outcomes that do not adequately consider rail safety. This will ultimately result in increased rates of fatalities, serious injuries and collisions.
Jonathan Earle said level crossing accidents were already a serious problem.
On average, 4 New Zealanders die in level crossing accidents each year. Another 14 people will suffer serious injuries and there will be 22 serious collisions between trains and motor vehicles at level crossings. And these collisions also have very serious psychological effects for our train drivers.
Mr Earle called for changes to the bill to resolve KiwiRail's concerns.
What KiwiRail is seeking is the ability to be considered an affected party for consent applications and plan changes if it has rail infrastructure located nearby. This will keep the public and our staff safe, help ensure the availability of a level crossing into the future and managing traffic flows.
KiwiRail General Counsel Jonathan Earle with that submission on the Resource Legislation Amendment Bill to the Local Government and Environment Committee on Thursday. A day earlier, a petition calling for a ban on smoking in cars was the subject of a submission to the Health Committee from Ministry of Health Chief Advisor Dr. Pat Tui, who said the evidence was clear that cigarette smoke in cars was particularly harmful to children.
That's for several reasons. One is that their ability to take themselves out of that exposure is limited. Second is that the level of smoke in cars where a person is smoking is higher. And also that's a degree of the time of exposure. The sort of harm that affects children particularly relates to respiratory disease. And the other risk, although it is a small one, it's quite a serious one, which is the existence of matches and lighters in cars leading to a fire in the car. So it's a rare occurrence, but it's a significant issue and can lead to fatalities.
Dr. Tui said about $1 million had been spent on advertising to warn against the dangers to children from smoking in cars, a figure which led to this thought from Health Committee member Annette King.
Would it be cheaper just to ban it? $1 million to the police to stop those they see smoking. I bet they'd love it.
And policing was the subject of a completely different petition over at the Law and Order Committee on Wednesday, calling on the Minister and Commissioner of Police to ensure a police officer be resident in the town of Ross in the South Island's west coast. The petition was presented by Ross Community Representative Charlie Macbeth.
This is the third time in recent history that Ross and the surrounding communities have had to fight to retain a police constable in our area. This is the first time we have had to take the battle all the way to Parliament. Now, Ross is part of a West Coast-wide effort against a police proposal to remove all community constables from Carrimere to Ross.
Mr Macbeth outlined the need for a police officer in his town.
Ross has not had a community constable at its police station since April last year, and petty crime and burglaries have already increased. Early intervention is a community constable having a little talk in the right ear, and that is generally enough for an individual to think about their actions. Ambulance at the top of the cliff stuff, not at the bottom. Community-based policing should not be lost to the West Coast.
Charlie Macbeth, and that petition remains under consideration of the Law and Order Committee. Meanwhile, the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee has called for public submissions on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Amendment Bill, which implements the TPP free trade deal. To make a submission, go to our website, parliamenttoday.co.nz, and click on Make Submission at the top of the page. Submissions are due by July 22nd.
That report from Rhys Lyon. The House sat for a total of just over 27 hours, 10 more than usual, and will be back at 2 on Tuesday to resume the budget debate, which has 9 hours and 16 minutes to go. I'm Tom Frewen, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.